Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly, and joining me this week is Ken Miller, Las Vegas Weekly associate editor. Thank you for being here.
It's great to be here again.
And you know, I'm excited because I think I've had you come on and talk about a lot of bad movies over the years.
This is true.
I'm glad that here we are at the end of the year where some of the big prestige pictures are coming out. Even though these aren't necessarily all great movies that we're going to talk about today, at least they're interesting movies that have something to them.
Well, I mean, I've put my time in, so I feel like I kind of deserve, you know, maybe a little taste of the good life now. So
there you go. Anyway. So starting off, actually, though, is a movie that maybe doesn't really qualify as prestige, but certainly one of the most anticipated movies of the whole year and perhaps arguably of the last 25 plus years is Tron Legacy.
Why are you here, Alan?
I was paged last night.
Oh, man, still rocking the pager. Good for you.
Yeah, your dad once told me I had to sleep with it. I still do. Page came from your dad's office at the arcade.
So?
That number's been disconnected for 20 years. Sam, two nights before he disappeared, he came to my house. I've cracked it, he kept saying. Now, he was talking about genetic algorithms, quantum teleportation. He said he was about to change everything, science, medicine, religion. He wouldn't have left that, Sam. He wouldn't have left you.
This is the sequel to the 1982 film Tron, which has a really, really rabid, dedicated cult following, sort of amazingly dedicated.
Yeah, it's pretty much seen as the touchstone for the current generation of nerds. I mean, you know, the show Chuck, you know, the Tron poster is in his room and actually has a bit of a role on the show itself.
Yes,
I think that's very – it's just very one of those movies that clicked with a lot of people.
And it's weird because, I mean – not having seen it at the time that it came out when I was extremely young, nor did I see it as a kid or as a teenager or in any of my sort of formative years. I didn't see this movie for the first time until about a week ago. And coming to it now, it sort of feels very anticlimactic. I mean, you can see how in 1982 the special effects, the computer animation that they used would have been pretty mind-blowing because it really had not been done before. But as a movie, as a story, it's definitely not very good.
Well, and I'm one of the generation that actually saw the movie when it came out in 82. Went to see it at a theater in a 99-cent theater somewhere after it had been playing for a while. So I got to see it cheap. And all I remember is just almost falling asleep because as visually interesting as it was, there was just no story for me to get involved with. And I lost interest. It's one of those movies that I saw once and have not seen since.
Right.
And I felt no reason to go back and see it again. Although I understand now if you go back and see it, it's amusing because of the antiquated looking visuals.
It does look incredibly dated.
I think you could kind of equate it to maybe like, you know, releasing an Atari 2600 and calling it the next, you know, state-of-the-art video game system. And,
right, you know, right. But so. I mean, there's a certain aesthetic. I mean, beyond just the technological achievement, it does have its own unique look, and I would give it credit for that. But it's interesting coming into this new version, which of course has all the force of the cutting edge special effects technology that we have now in 2010. And from our perspective now, it looks, I think, pretty incredible. And I just wonder, though, when we look back on this movie in 20 or 30 years, is it just going to look as, you know, just as hokey and just as silly?
Well, it's going to depend on if we're watching it in the theater or at home by then, because I mean, let's face it, this is one of those movies you absolutely have to see in the theater. You will not get the experience watching this at home.
Right.
Maybe when they really revolutionize this 3D television technology, that'll happen. But this is a movie that if you don't see it in the theater, you're missing out. And there really is no other reason to see it other than the theater, because it's visually amazing.
Yeah.
But the story is just as it's just as boring as the original.
It is just as dreadful. And I think they try really hard. The idea, Jeff Bridges has returned. He plays Kevin Flynn, this sort of computer genius guy who was the main character of the first film. And he's now trapped in the grid, which is this virtual world populated by programs that are personified as humans. It's kind of they don't really do a good job of explaining what the world is or how it came to be or anything like that.
No.
But the idea is that he's trapped there, and his son, played by Garrett Hedlund, is he goes into the grid to kind of rescue his father or bring him back to the real world. And yeah, the writers, who are a pair of writers who worked on Lost, actually, work really hard to explain a lot more stuff, but not in an any more coherent way. And it just means a lot of more exposition that is not in any way interesting.
Well, yeah, I feel like even discussing the story is kind of redundant, because I don't think after this movie's over, if you're telling this to someone, you're going to be trying to remember what it was that the movie was about, because all it is it's basically just the light cycle chases. It's the ring toss wars, whatever those things are called.
Yeah.
The overwhelming sense of coldness and sterility that this world is. And the only part I remembered with any clarity was Michael Sheen, playing this over the top campy
right.
guy with a cane, this albino looking guy.
Yeah.
And that was the one moment where I thought, oh, the movie's coming to life a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the Daft Punk soundtrack kicked in, and it was kind of, oh, this is pretty cool. And then we go back to
just the
boring old
questing and the you got to get to the thing and the whatnot.
And I really thought there was a dopey cinematic device used at the very beginning of this movie, where we're shown the quote unquote present, which is Jeff Bridges talking to his young son, and it's the computer generated Jeff Bridges to make him look young. So that we understand that when he went into the computer at the beginning, he stayed as his alter ego Clue, while the real Jeff Bridges aged.
Right.
But using him in the beginning of the movie, that you never fully saw his face. He was always turned around or in shadow. And it was just such an obvious clunky device that right away, I just thought, wow, this is the best that they could do.
Yeah.
All this time they've had to prepare for this movie, and that is the best they can do.
It is a little. I think the effect where they make Jeff Bridges look like the younger Jeff Bridges is, on the one hand, very impressive, but on the other hand, it's still not quite perfect.
And no, I think far from it.
It works in the sense that the character Clue, who is a sort of a virtual program, is supposed to look like Jeff Bridges. It works because that character is supposed to be like a computer-generated entity in a way.
Well, true, but nobody else in the computer world looked computer-generated. Everyone else looked like human.
Like a real person,
every time I saw the Clue, it helped to just continue taking me out of the movie, because it was so obvious what they were trying to do is to remain loyal to the original Jeff Bridges image.
Right.
And it just, even with the technology they have nowadays, it still doesn't quite work.
I would say that in contrast, like, it is distracting, but I could sort of argue myself into believing it wherein it was Clue. But in that opening sequence, when it's meant to be the Jeff Bridges character as a younger person, it is really distracting because it doesn't look real.
Exactly. And that this is the first scene of the movie.
Where
everyone's looking forward to this amazing, technological feat. And the first thing you see is a bad computer image of young Jeff Bridges. It's just... Anyway.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But I would say otherwise, overall, and certainly within when they get into the computer world, it does look pretty darn amazing. I think the effects for the most part are very, very well done. The costume design, the sets and everything. And this is one of the few movies that I feel like the 3D works. They've taken a lot of care to integrate the 3D effects and make it part of the look of the movie. And that it would be worth, if you're going to go see it, and I don't know that I would necessarily recommend it, but if you're seeing it, you should probably see it in 3D.
Exactly. And I would point out to any parents who are taking kids to this movie, it's a full 2 hours long. Actually, okay, I think a little over two hours.
Long.
And there are a lot of moments in this movie where nothing is happening.
Yes.
So if you got restless young kids, be prepared for them to, squirm a little bit, because this is not nonstop action like you would expect.
No. I think really the main audience for this movie is going to be those people who loved that first movie and have been sitting and waiting for it to come out. I think beyond that audience, it's really
Although in a holiday season where there's not a lot of family stuff right now, this will be a family. Parents are going to be taking kids.
And I think in that sense, it's not really. I wouldn't recommend it as a family movie.
But it could have been much tighter. The whole time I was feeling like there were so many scenes that could have been cut.
Yeah.
And the movie would have been fine.
It's a good half hour longer than the original. And so, yeah, I think I don't want to say it's a disappointment, because I don't have that anticipation level that people did. But I think ultimately it's a pretty hollow superficial experience. It looks cool, but it's very boring and it's not going to stick with you afterwards. So I can't say that I recommend it.
Yeah, I would say 2 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, I would give it 2.5 just because of the visuals. I was impressed enough. But still, overall, other than for the hardcore fans, I can't say I recommend seeing it. Moving on to something that I would recommend, though, and a movie that's gotten a lot of awards attention here at the end of the year is Darren Aronofsky's film Black Swan.
Who is that? Hey. You okay? You can't smoke in here. Well, I won't tell if you won't. So, big day's getting closer and closer, huh? Well, I can't wait. I think you're gonna be amazing. So, you wanna talk about it? Is that Arctic? Well, we're playing a little too rough for you. Come on, Nina, he's brilliant. Sure. But it's not like he's all warm and fuzzy.
Well, you don't know it.
Someone's hot for teacher. Oh, come on, it's okay. I don't blame you.
I should go home.
Oh, Nina, come on. I'm just playing around.
This movie stars Natalie Portman as a ballet dancer who is very driven and very ambitious and under a lot of pressure. She's about to play the lead role in Swan Lake as the sort of a dual role of the white swan and the black swan. And she's trying to perfect her dancing, and she's also being told to kind of embrace her dark side as this other character. And throughout the movie, it's sort of, you get the sense that either she's going crazy or some sort of weird supernatural transformation is happening to her. And it's never quite clear. It's clear towards the end, and we don't want to give it away. But the bulk of the movie is about what is going on with this girl, and is it all in her head or not? And it's the kind of thing I think that could have been super hokey and melodramatic and just ridiculous and you're going to roll your eyes at, but they managed to get just the right tone, and it's really quite fascinating, I think.
I agree. I think cinematically this is one of the most impressive movies of the year. If you're a movie fan, just the movie, you know, the way movies are crafted, you'll find a lot to enjoy here.
Yes.
And there are certain scenes that I think will be stuck in people's memory for quite some time.
Yeah.
It's to me, what it ended up being, without giving anything away, to me, it ended up being a very interesting examination of the artistic quest for perfection, but from a physical level, not a spiritual level. There's a lot of physicality in this movie. You know, the effect that this you know, striving for perfection takes on your body. So, I mean, there are some very queasy scenes in here. It's not easy to sit through all the way. There are certain scenes where you'll be wanting to look away. But ultimately, it conveyed that message very clearly to me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm on the side that says that this is all mental illness. I think Natalie Portman's character was already unbalanced at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
I thought that, to me, that was clear.
Yeah.
And halfway through, the movie started to kind of remind me of A Beautiful Mind in terms of, is this actually happening? Is she imagining this person or this scenario?
Right.
So, I mean, but again, makes it fascinating to maybe go back and watch it again and with fresh eyes and kind of reevaluate.
Right. I mean, I think A Beautiful Mind is sort of cheesy and kind of uplifting, and this movie is a lot darker than that and a lot more ambiguous than that. I think even though by the end you get a sense of sort of what's quote-unquote really happening, I think at the same time you're so drawn in to the world and you're drawn into the perspective of Natalie Portman's character that you believe everything that's going on as it's happening. And even when you get to the end, you're not entirely sure what to believe and what not to believe. And I think that was something that the movie did really, really well. Again, it could have been something like Fight Club, for example, which I think is a great movie, but I don't think would have worked here, where you get to sort of like the twist moment or whatever, and it's just trying to hit you over the head with the, oh, here's what was really going on, I bet you didn't realize it or something. And it's not like that at all. I don't think Aronofsky is interested in pulling the rug out from under the audience or in kind of manipulating them in a certain specific way. I think he, as a filmmaker, is as immersed in the perspective of this character as the audience is, as he wants the audience to be. And I thought that was what probably the greatest strength of the movie is, that you get caught up in it, that as ridiculous as it is, you're right there with her, sort of wondering what's going on and being drawn into the world of the movie. And I mean, that's Aronofsky and that's Natalie Portman, too, who gives a really good performance in this role, I think.
Yeah, you and I had this conversation earlier about her chances of an Oscar. I mean, I think she'll get a nomination, but you're on the side that thinks she'll win. I'm on the side that wonders if the Academy ultimately will give an award for this type of movie, because it is not your typical Oscar-nominated type performance. It's a lot of what she does is more reacting to what's going on around her,
right,
than actually getting a chance to really act. And a lot of her performance impressed me physically because she clearly lost weight and really learned ballet moves for this movie. I mean, it is clearly her in a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
But is that going to be enough for her to win the Oscar? I mean, I don't know. It was an excellent movie, but I'm not sure if I would say her performance was Oscar worthy more than just workmanlike. I mean, she did a very good job.
I mean, I think speculating on what the Academy wants to reward or not is sort of beside the point. I mean, I think it's a really impressive performance, and it's impressive, I think, because it's reactive, that a different kind of actress or a different kind of approach could have been a lot more showy and a lot bigger, whereas she internalizes what I think is appropriate for the character. This is a person who takes all the pressures that are on her, that are being put on her by her mother, by the director of the show, and by herself, and kind of takes them all inside her. And that performance is really internal, and I think it's appropriate for the character, and it makes the movie better. It makes it more engrossing because you're drawn in along with her. I mean, I think a different kind of more traditionally Oscar-baiting performance, maybe you could say, that was a lot bigger, wouldn't have worked nearly as well for this movie.
True. Well, I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, speculating is kind of pointless. I find it fascinating that all the talk of her winning the Oscar is already in the bag, because, you know, I mean, there's still a lot of good performances out there that I think are going to be.
Sure, you know, and you never know, and there's always surprises. And I mean, I think, but I don't think she needs to win the Oscar in order to sort of validate this movie as a good movie. And the performance is a really good performance. I mean, I think.
Yeah. To me, this is Aronofsky's movie completely. I mean, everyone's just kind of a contributing player.
Yeah.
And I feel that way also about Barbara Hershey, Winona Ryder, Vincent Cassel, all excellent actors.
Yeah.
But more just in service of his plot than actually getting a chance to show their acting chops.
Right. I think. I don't know. I would say it's Aronofsky's movie and Portman's movie, and the rest of them are supporting. I mean, like Mila Kunis, for example, who's really played up as important in sort of the marketing and the hype about this movie, had a much smaller part than I had anticipated, and she does a good job. But it's definitely, I think, because the movie is about what's going on with Portman's character, every other character is sort of a reflection of her mental state.
True,
and they exist only as they relate to her and how she sees things. And I think that's appropriate. That works for the film.
True. I mean, it's an excellent psychological study.
Yeah.
I thought it was really well done with a very physical element to it.
So. Yeah. So a very good film, I think. I would give it 3.5 out of 5 stars, and I would say definitely this is the movie that people should check out this weekend.
I would give it 4 out of 5.
Yeah. All right. So we definitely recommend that. And another movie that's gotten a lot of awards attention, is sort of baffling to me, is The Fighter.
We're going
to
train. They got to go.
They
got to
go, Mick. Come on.
Right.
Ask him, George. Ask him if he would have won Sanchez without his brother.
No, I wouldn't have won Sanchez if it wasn't for Dickie.
How can you say that to O'Keefe?
Because it's true. Right? I went in without a game plan. It wasn't working, so I went back to what I learned with Dickie. And I wouldn't have won without you either, O'Keefe, okay? I mean, you know that. We worked hard. You got me ready.
You got your confidence and your focus from O'Keefe and from Sal and your father and from me. Dickie's a junk bag.
Hey.
He's a junk bag.
Why am I the problem? I'm his blood. I'm his family.
I'm the one fighting, okay? Not you, not you, and not you. I know what I need.
And you need Dickie?
I want Dickie back. And I want you, Charlene. And I want O'Keefe. I want my family. What's wrong with that?
And this movie stars Mark Wahlberg as, it's a true story, it's a biopic about this boxer named Mickey Ward, who came from sort of working class Lowell, Massachusetts, and worked hard to become a boxing champion in the 90s. And it's less about boxing and about his rise to fame than it is about his relationship with his brother, played by Christian Bale, who was sort of a also-ran, almost champion, but never really made it and ended up becoming a crack addict. And the difficulties that they have in their relationship and Mickey Ward's relationship with his whole family. Melissa Leo plays his mother, and he has seven sisters who are played by the actual people, interestingly, weirdly enough.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's weird watching this movie. Some of the characters come off as so cartoonish in their exaggeration, and I wonder, is it because the people are really like that, or it's because they're trying to sort of heighten their, you know, they're playing themselves up because they're in a movie? And I don't know, but that was one of the faults I thought this movie had, is that the supporting characters were so ridiculous in their exaggerated broadness.
And
that
yet
it kind
they're
of
the
takes
actual
you out
people,
of it.
So.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that they're not overacting as themselves. It is possible. So, yeah, I mean, I think the thing about this movie, it's not a bad movie, I wouldn't say. But I would say that it's just kind of what you would expect out of this sort of thing. And I would hope for more given Christian Bale's presence and given the director, David O. Russell, who's done a lot of weird, offbeat kind of things. And he doesn't really do much more with this movie than I think any other director could have done.
Exactly. That I'm a big David O. Russell fan. I've pretty much liked everything he's done. And I had kind of not high hopes going into this, but at least expectations that there would have been more to it than just a retelling of a what I look at as a, like a Lifetime type story.
Right.
And that's exactly what we get. And you and I have had this discussion before, too. One of my pet peeves is really movies based on actual events. I find them to be usually, if not all the time, not worthy of a 2-hour movie. I mean, the story almost inevitably peters out toward the end. You're left with some very, you know, ordinary elements that don't make for compelling filmmaking. So, you know, there are elements to the story that are very, very interesting. But again, this the same thing happens toward the end where everything plays out exactly as you think it's going to.
Right.
There are no surprises.
Right.
There are no revelations. And so I wouldn't say I was disappointed from the standpoint of the story, but I was disappointed in that Russell brought nothing to it other than just retelling the story.
Right. It is disappointing. I mean, I think you see at times maybe there's some shots or some moments where it seems like he's trying to kind of break out a little or go in a different direction. But
where Christian Bale's character sings to his mother in the car.
Yeah, just kind of a weird random little moment.
But that moment was so out of place with the tone of the rest of the movie that it was very like it was almost uncomfortable to watch. Like what is this doing in this movie? It's just it was just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, and if he'd have gone for that tone throughout the whole movie, I don't think it would have been quite as you know, jarring. But
yeah,
but it ended up being that.
But right, it does seem like there's a sort of tension between the efforts to do something a little different and the way that you have to ultimately tell this story.
But acting wise, you know, Christian Bale continues to surprise me.
Yeah,
in the way he alters his body shape, his
voice.
Yeah,
he's very wiry,
and he is
in this movie.
He is a very loose cannon in this movie that you kind of. When he's on screen, you're a little on edge wondering, where is this guy going? What's he going to do?
Right.
So, I mean, I have no problems with Christian Bale. He did an excellent job. I've never been a big Mark Wahlberg fan. Again, we've had this discussion. Not a big fan of his work. I mean, he tends to do – and now he's got two sports movies that are very similar to me. Invincible in this. I mean, he meets – you know, a barmaid in both of them. You know, he becomes the person who
believes in him,
the underdog who could. I mean, it's just like, oh boy. So anyway, enough on him. But the supporting cast, Melissa Leo, I thought was very convincing as his mother.
Yeah, they're almost
over the
too
top performance,
yeah.
but very convincing because, as I understand, this is exactly the way this woman was.
Right.
Interesting what you said about the sisters because I recognize one of those actresses as from Gone Baby Gone.
Oh,
so
really? Well,
so apparently
it may be that they grabbed local color for both of those movies. I mean, that's at least I read this in one review, and I guess it could be inaccurate, but it was in Slate they mentioned this in a review, so I assume that it's true. I suppose maybe it could not be.
And let's mention one obvious fact here that people are probably wondering about. There's not a lot of boxing in this movie.
That's true. And the boxing that there is in this movie is not very exciting.
It is probably some of the worst film boxing I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And again, I'm like, David O. Russell, I mean, what? I mean, he could have done something really cool with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think they try really hard to recreate the look and the approach of like the way it would have looked if you'd watched it on TV
on
at the
HBO,
time,
right.
Which is kind of flat and not particularly exciting. But it seems to me that Russell is clearly more interested in the relationship between the brothers than he is in the boxing, because again, they're barely spending any time on the boxing. And the real guy, Mickey Ward, went on to these very famous fights with Arturo Gatti. And I'm not a boxing fan at all, so I don't really know about this, but I know that this was the most famous thing that he ever did.
Three
and
of
the
most boxing fans will tell you three of the most amazing fights in the history of the sport.
Right.
And in fact, one of the men that I was sitting with at the screening was before the movie started said, "I'm so excited to see this. Those three fights were incredible."
Right. And we don't get
and
to see them at all.
And they're not a part of the film at all.
They're relegated to a title card at the end. So
if that's what you're watching this for, folks, you might want to look elsewhere. It's one of those, you know, as far as I'm concerned, made for Oscar type productions that does a serviceable job, and then it goes on. This is not a movie you're going to remember.
No,
in my opinion.
No,
you'll watch this, you'll move on.
Yeah, I agree. I would give it a 2.5 stars. I think again, it's not bad. It does kind of what it's supposed to do, but it isn't going to stick with you in any way.
Right. And this is my general review for all True Life Stories. 2.5, yeah. Middle of the road, because, you know, there's only so much you can do with a true story.
Right.
Well, before we break, one of my favorite in jokes is the movie Fargo, where at the beginning of the movie, you see this movie. This is a retelling of the events as they actually happened.
Right.
And it was all made up.
Of course. Yeah.
And see, now that I love that because they made a compelling story. And I was like, wow, finally a true life story that was great.
Right.
And it was all BS.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it can be done, but I don't think this is the movie to do it. So check out Black Swan, though. I think that we can agree to recommend that one. That's probably the one to see. And my thanks to Ken Miller for joining me this week.
My pleasure.
For Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.